Well, hello and welcome to Fundraising Voices. I'm joined this time by Craig, Did and Phillips. Welcome, Craig.
Hello, Ben. Good to see you.
Good to speak with you.
Speak to you, rather. Yeah.
Indeed. So I just wanted to go through a few points. Craig, you had a really good article in Third Sector at the end of 2015, basically looking ahead, casting the view over the coming year, and really giving quite a strong message to charities, saying really quite strongly, you need to change, you need to adapt, or there'll be a difficult future. Can you just explain a little bit about why you said that and the reasons behind putting that message out there?
Yeah, of course, Ben. Yeah, I think, you know, I spend most of my time out in the world with third sector organisations of different kinds, large and small. Yeah. And I think what we've been seeing over the last couple of years, I think, has been a sort of gradual tightening of conditions and fairly incremental responses from charities. Mm. And yet what I think is coming down the road is of an altogether different order. And the financial crunch, particularly represented by public spending reductions, is going to catch a lot of organisations out, especially anyone who's got anything to do with local authorities or the NHS.
Yeah.
And I don't think charities have got their heads around this sufficiently, and I've come across very few organisations that are responding to this in any real way.
Right.
And I think that so I thought, you know, the idea of that article was to say, look, unless you're up for the kind of response here, which isn't typical of how you react to these things, then you need to consider whether, you know, you ought to, you know, whether to carry on or not, really, because I think I think we're going to see a lot of change, and, you know, and anecdotally we're seeing quite a lot of mergers, quite a lot of things going on in responses among the smarter organisations that I think have seen what's coming. So that was the kind of motivation that I was going out to the world, not really seeing much reaction from organisations, and kind of wanting to sort of sound a wake up call, really. So that's what that accounts for that kind of message, adapt or die.
Yeah, sure. And is that literally do you think that's just down to a pure lack of awareness from third sector organisations not realising the scale of the challenge that's coming?
I think it's complicated. I think it is that, definitely. I think there's a lot of organisations don't raise their head enough and look out into the world. I think that's for sure. I think there's a couple of other factors. I think that governance in charities is often pretty weak and insular in the same way. Yeah. And I think thirdly, I think there's a call it a generational problem. I think there's a cadre of people who have been in the sector for a long time, during which it's kind of just been growing, you know, mostly, quite recently. From the kind of late 80s, early 90s, the charity sector has had a long summer. You know, the people, most people sitting at the top don't really remember anything else than that. And therefore, I don't think we've really had a sort of a huge recession or even depression in the sector before. So people are just not kind of conditioned to expect, you know, the kind of upheaval, which I think is happening in some sectors and is going to happen very soon. So for that reason, I think, you know, there is just this sort of torpor, really, and lack of urgency in response, which comes out of that kind of view that somehow things will get better. And I'm just not seeing that. I'm not seeing the evidence for that either in the middle distance.
Yeah, I think it could be even, I think you mentioned the kind of time period of the last sort of 15, 20 years. I think it could even go back, if you look back through sort of British charitable history for the last 50 or 60 years, actually, since the Second World War, you had a very generous generation, the baby boom generation, who came through and have really sustained a lot of charitable projects and endeavours through their donations. So that's kind of carried the way for a certain period of time. You then had a kind of almost revolution where charities discovered that they could market themselves in maybe the 70s and 80s, and that you had that kind of charitable fundraising as marketing kind of revolution there. And then, as you say, the kind of new labour sort of 90s to maybe the present time. So there's been these sort of waves of funding, as you know, from the fundraising point of view. And it seems now, from what you said, for very different reasons, those three waves are all finishing. So we do need to look forward to try to replace that and hopefully grow as well. You've got some recommendations in the article, actually. So one of them is actually looking at mergers or takeovers. Is that something that you see as being central to Charity's future?
Yeah, well, there's you know, when I started out, there were 100,000 charities 20 years ago. Mm. Now I think there's 160,000, and I just think that's probably unsustainable.
Right.
I think it's responsible to consolidate organisations' costs wherever possible.
Yeah,
I think there's often a reluctance to do that. Quite a part of my day job is to help facilitate mergers, so there's an element of me you know, beating my own drum with this, but
sure.
In other sectors where you have subscale organisations and you have obvious duplication of costs, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, there's one or two sectors that I know quite well, particularly dealing with cancers,
right.
There are and illnesses that there are often, you know, a number of charities kind of dealing with the same thing in the same way,
mm-hmm.
the same audience, and you know, and you know, you talk to the boards, and I think they'd rather eat their own hands than merge with this other organisation, and
yeah.
I just think that's not really on, and it looks particularly absurd in the current context. So I would like to see a far bigger drive from government around merger. I'd like have an office or part of government yeah. deals with the sector to say, look, we will back organisations
yeah.
looking to merge, and we will put bespoke funding out there to match the efforts of organisations that are seeking to make good mergers, because we can only be helped by that. You know, there's some fantastic mergers in recent years that have really, really added value. When I found his value, I mean, 1 + 1 = 17 kind of value, you know,
yeah.
the two big cancer charities. It's got to happen, and it's got to happen in a load of other areas too. I'm a huge fan of mergers. I just think we need many, many, many more of them in order to make the kind of, you know, create a bigger quantum of social change, which I think is why we're all here.
Sure, I mean, that's the goal. That's got to be the goal for the third sector. I mean, what you're talking about requires charities to kind of put themselves almost to one side, though, doesn't it? Because we, especially for the larger charities, we can see kind of their identity is very strong, and they have quite strong internal cultures. But it requires them to just look past that, doesn't it, and just look to the greater good a bit.
It does. It actually involves, you know, a very charitable view of the world, which is kind of ironic, isn't it? Because you kind of think that wouldn't be too much of an ask. Mm. You know, I come at this not just as you know, an observer. I led my own organisation, which I founded, into a significant merger, which led to a new yeah. identity.
Right.
And I actually found that process, and so did our people, to be tough. It was difficult.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, I think the final product we ended up with, which is a new organisation with far more reach, far more sustainability. The satisfaction that you know, one of our main satisfactions from my professional life so far has been that new creation that was brought from these two organisations, both of which were perfectly fine and doing quite well actually, but we created something much stronger out of it and much better and with much more reach. And I just think that there's so much to be gained from a well-executed merger that I think it's not just something we should sort of you know just knuckle down and do for the greater good. I think it can be a source of great satisfaction and joy to actually do this well, because it's a deeply creative process when it's done right. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No, it all sounds credible. It kind of links in a way to another one of the recommendations that you make, which is about being really clear and focused on where you're adding value and not just doing something because you've always done it. Did you find that in your experience? Has that thinking through enabled organisations that you've worked with to really understand where they can add value, and in doing so, just focus down on that area of work?
Yeah. Well, you know, I suppose if there was no need to tell organisations to focus, I probably wouldn't have any work, frankly.
Yeah, sure.
Most of what I do involves going into organisations that are doing, you know, 17 different things.
Yeah.
Most of them not very well.
Yeah.
And finding the one thing that they're good at and have exceptional. And do exceptionally well,
yeah.
And better than other people,
yeah.
And encouraging them to focus on that and grow that part of their business.
Yeah,
we have this awful tendency in the sector to set up kind of, you know, cottage industry level operations,
sure.
trying to do what other people can do a lot better. And the big charities are guilty of it. You know, I was with an agent, one of the big name charities very recently, obviously I won't name them. They provide all manner, you know, they're turning over, you know, well in excess of 100 million a year.
Yeah.
They're delivering all manner of means of things, you know, in different sectors. That they're subscale in all the sectors that they're in, even at that size.
Right.
And they're jack of all trades, master of none. And as a result, they're losing in all those sectors very badly.
Yeah.
And they're having to retrench, frankly, them. That is actually to be applauded, because I think the management have realised that actually that this organisation is fantastic at one of the five things it does, and that's all it's going to really do in the future. So it's going to shrink, and it's going to find partners for its operations and with the its core.
Yeah.
But it's finally realised, I think, after decades of trying unsuccessfully to grow a footprint in all these different areas, that actually it's better not to be doing that. Because if you look at successful businesses, they tend to be pretty focused on a particular segment, and they have, you know, one or a range of very related products around that.
Yeah.
That's the way to build great organizations, really. Particularly if you're small, you know, small businesses are normally very focused. They don't try and do everything for everybody.
Yeah, of course.
Know that's no way to run a railway. So yeah. That is what we're, you know, that's what I'm pushing, really, is, you know, in drop some stuff.
Yeah.
Just focus on the things you're really good at, because that's the way to grow. That's the way to succeed. It's the way to have an impact on the problem.
Yeah, sure. And just simplify. That kind of reminds me of another article that you wrote, which was specifically about Kids Company earlier on in 2015. And that's, I mean, you write about governance, which is going to be a big focus for the sector in the next year, following the other interim review and various other kind of initiatives that are out there.
Yeah.
But is what you're talking about essentially a governance issue? Because in the, you know, I don't want to kind of just look always to the commercial sector, but you wrote about Kids Company that there was no obvious or apparent way that this organization had moved forward from the day that it was founded, from a governance point of view, to the day that it eventually ceased to exist. This, you know, the similar people were, the same people actually were in charge. The governance structure is very similar. So is this what you're describing in terms of proliferation of different, lots of different activities, is that essentially a governance question for the sector to try to solve?
I think governance lies at the heart of this. I think there's a cause and effect question with all this. You know, does poor governance sort of cause these problems, or are these problems kind of, you know, do they then sort of bounce back and reduce, you know, diminish the quality of governance? I think the Kids Company is, what's interesting about Kids Company is that it's an extreme version of a very common phenomenon, which is, you know, the truth is finally coming out. I think that a lot of charity governance is weak, and whatever, you know, I know NCBO and others have to go on the radio and defend, you know, the fact that we've got, you know, tens of thousands of people doing this, you know, taking responsibility for charities.
Yeah.
Virtually every charity I've been involved with has got a significant governance deficit, and one which would be, you know, and in some cases is concerning. Kids Company is just a very sort of writ large example of that.
Right.
And you know, I think the talk now is, I think, of making some kind of, you know, mandatory training and development of trustees, you know,
yes.
in a way that sort of I think school governors and others have to have.
Yes.
I think that's okay. I think I'd rather have a smaller number of better trustees.
Yeah.
I think there are, you know, there are often too many trustees involved in an organisation compared to, say, the number of directors in a small business.
Yeah.
And there are, I think although there are some very well established good practice principles around governance that have been, you know, promoted for years.
Yeah.
I think somehow if you look, let's say, at corporate governance, I think corporate governance has come up with the agenda in the corporate sector in recent years, following a series of problems. But I think there was a general recognition in the corporate sector that, hey, corporate governance has lost its way.
Yeah.
So we saw a series of improvements around corporate governance. And I think corporate governance is much better today than it was 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think we'd have that same drive within the charitable sector.
Mm.
So I think, you know, governance in charitable sector is kind of where it's always been, which has been not quite good enough.
Uh-huh.
And of course, as Kids Company is exposed, you know, where you've got a lack of robustness, you've all these problems trail in its wake.
Uh-huh.
And I think we're, you know, this you know, and what we're going to see now, I think, is a fairly firm line from government that this has to get better, or else there will be a different kind of regulation.
Does that line have to come from government? Or I'm just thinking in comparison. So you've got this sort of PLC, classic PLC ownership model, where you've got shareholders aboard who have responsibility towards the shareholders. You haven't quite got that with charities, have you? You haven't got a group of people like shareholders quite. To whom you are.
I've got a membership, but normally, right. normally the members are the board.
Yeah. True. That's true.
My organisation had a membership which was the electorate of the board.
Yeah.
And sort of the membership was akin to a shareholder body, if you know what I mean. But normally,
yeah.
I think in 9 out of 10 cases, the shareholders are also the trustees, and then also obviously the way the leadership of the organisation normally are not directors of the limited company that sits that the charity is linked to. So the dynamics, I think, of charities are unfortunate in that regard, because often the beating heart and knowledge of the charity isn't round the table and isn't part of corporate governance. So in the case of Kids Company, Camilla couldn't be now struck off the list of, you know, she couldn't be made ineligible to be a director of a company because she never was one.
Yeah.
Because she wouldn't have been a trustee, you know, which is just kind of bizarre, really, you know. And
yeah.
I think since I wrote that article, Ben, you know, I think a bit more has come out that that's cast a slightly lesser light on Camilla, because I've always had quite an understanding attitude to her, because I think she was, you know, she was a social innovator that was, you know, that you need to
put
water on these people, and you need to let it grow, and you need to give them a lot of space.
Yeah.
And what didn't happen after that was the formalisation of what Kids Company did and the rollout and so on, which is what you'd see otherwise. So Camilla's, you know, Camilla, I used to see Camilla perhaps as a little bit of a victim of this whole thing, in that she didn't know what she didn't know and all of that.
Yeah.
I think the more I found out at the time in terms of some of the things that went on, I'm a little less charitable in my view, in that I think she's come, some of the sort of findings that people like the Times or others do suggest that her ability to manipulate trustees was higher than I perhaps estimated.
Do you see it though essentially as a failure more or less widely to move organizations on? You know, people often get into the third sector because they want to do something, they want to achieve social change, but then it kind of doesn't always move on beyond that sort of small scale. Is it essentially a failure to scale up from small beginnings?
Yeah, it is that, and I think it's one of the weaknesses of it's a weakness across the economy anyway. There's tons of very small, high potential businesses that never grow because we're not very good at turning small scale creativity into mass adoption in this country. We really struggle with it. It's one of the big, well documented problems we've got. You know, other countries are rubbish at thinking about what to do and sort of very good at taking the ideas and running with them. We're better in the kind of, you know, in the inventor's shed, if you like. So it's a bit of a general problem. One of the reasons I'm involved in Impetus PEF as a trustee, which is a fantastic organisation which scales promising organisations, is that, you know, we believe there are many scalable models developed by the social sector that deserve to be taken to the next level. We find in our work that quite a lot of our work is in kind of like removing some of the boundaries to that, to ambition and to change within those organisations, because even the most creative organisations can often be the most conservative in our sector.
Sure.
And a kind of small is beautiful ideology is very strong, you know. And one of the big differences I noticed, as you might have picked up, I have a lot of links into commercial sector and through a number of things I do.
Sure.
And what you find in small scale business, you know, most of the time is a massive ambition to grow. And it's not just because people want to get rich. That's often not what it is. I think a lot of commercial entrepreneurs really want to see, they want to see what they're doing taken to the max, whatever that is. Mm. And I think in our sector, you get that intermittently or occasionally, but you don't always get that same sort of desire to say, well, we've got something fantastic here.
Mm.
Let's take this everywhere. So, you know, Impetus PEF, you know, we struggle slightly to find those, you know, we don't struggle to find the ideas.
Mm.
There's plenty of great ideas out there and some good small scale practice. What we struggle to find is that plus the combination of ambition and vision and energy required to take it all to the next level. It's an interesting phenomenon in our third sector, really.
Yeah, indeed. And that kind of brings us to one of the last things that you're kind of highlighting in the article, really, which is just saying, are you up for this? You know, are you actually looking to the most senior people in the organisations, whether they're big or small? Have you actually, you know, got the will, as it were, to actually make these really quite difficult decisions in terms of focusing on your real value added? But, you know, you mentioned redundancies as well, and you know, potentially looking at smaller organizations and actually downsizing to pivot into different areas of activity. What's your sense as you work with different organizations? What's your sense as to that kind of appetite for the fight almost across the sector? Is it there, or are you doubting that it's there?
It's very varied, I think. There appears to be quite a lot of retirements and people sort of stepping back at the moment, I've noticed. And that's probably to be welcomed. I think it's very honest to say, look, I've fought the good fight. I'm not up for this next stage. And I think I applaud people who do that. I think it's very honest. I can't stand people who carry on and with no desire to address issues, particularly because I think they just lead their organisations down a hole, and that's not on in my view.
Mm.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? I think the hardest bit of all this, I think, is that we have to address workforce issues in the sector. Right. You know, we've got, you know, between 2000 and 2010, the sector had this sort of huge expansion of workforce. You know, grew an awful lot.
Mm.
You know, I did it. We all did it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to a point where, you know, we can't keep that workforce going at its current strength. And I think we've got to look at two or three areas. We've got to look at productivity, which means that, you know, we've got to get get more per person out of what we've got, and also we've got to look at how we help, you know, those that we need to say goodbye to move on, and that's just not something we've got skilled at, you know. And in my own business, you know, I've had to make difficult decisions. You know, I'm in a very cyclical business now. You know, it waxes and wanes, and when it waxes, you hire. When it wanes, you have to say goodbye to people.
Yeah.
You might not need to say goodbye to somebody alone. You might just have to move set one set of skills out and another set of skills in. You do it because you have to do it, and but it can be handled. I think one thing these organisations often have is the thought and empathy and sort of willingness to try and make it work for people that can make them very good at this. You know, because some sectors are terrible. People are treated awfully. They're kind of they're pretty much frog marched out of the organisation. You know, when they're not wanted anymore. And it doesn't have to be like that. When people move out, it can be a much more empowering and positive thing for people than this. So I think as a sector, we've almost got the skills to be able to manage our change much better than the corporate sector.
Mm.
But I think we tend to be too reluctant to address the workforce too early and say, look, you know, we need to be 20% lighter. So let's do it. Let's do it in one go, and let's get it all done, and address the issue as a big thing we've got to deal with for the next year, so that we can then clear our minds and move on, rather than just see this kind of gradual, you know, sort of contraction of the organisation over time, and people leaving, you know, without much support or help, and the organisation not really saving what it hoped to save, and sometimes not losing the right people and the right skills either. So I think it's all about being a bit clearer about saying, well, you know, we're not going to be in, you know, education or whatever it is anymore, or social care or whatever it is. We're going to just cut that off, and we're going to make sure the workforce go through that. Some organisations are doing this really well. I'm not saying they're not, but I just see a kind of a reluctance to do it. Again, it's this leadership generation that hasn't had to do the difficult things that are guilty here. And different cultural expectations around employment as well. You know, I think, you know, anyone I talk to who's under 30, they don't have these big expectations of what an employer is going to do for them. Over 40, and it's very different. It's people feel very like that they're owed quite a lot by their employer. It's much less transactional. I think the world is more transactional now, actually. And none of us expects the same things from an employer that we did 20, 30 years ago.
So there's
a lot of social change whirling around this as well that we need to just accept is happening, working with the grain of.
Yeah, it's a generational question, isn't it, to a certain extent. So I guess looking ahead over the next year, if we were to have, you know, similar conversation on 29th of January or whatever it might be next year, 2017, what do you see happening over the next year? Do you think the messages that you've spelt out will dawn on people and people will realise that they're necessary, or will there be will there be a continuing kind of kicking the can a bit down the road and seeing what's happening? What do you think will happen over the next year or so?
I think there'll be a bit of both. I think the biggest crunch within the austerity sort of era, I think, is due in a couple of years. In the middle of this term, if you watch the public sector, the government has kind of they've front loaded.
Yes.
Certain amount of they backloaded a certain amount of the pain around the NHS.
Yeah.
You know, which consumes an awful lot of public money.
Sure.
They've stepped back, I think, from some of the harder decisions that they might have made now around with austerity.
Yeah.
And I think the prospects around recovery are perhaps less propitious than they were 6 months to a year ago. I think things are not looking as good for the public finances as they probably were even at the election. So what it all adds up to, I think, is that you know, we will see further fiscal consolidation, which will manifest in quite a powerful way, I think, in the sector. So, you know, again, I think we're in this sort of, you know, a bit like 2015. We will probably see some movements in the right direction. I think we'll see a certain amount of kicking the can down the road. I think the real story will play out between now and 2020, because a lot of things have been delayed and procrastinated on, because that's how government is a bit. But I think we're looking at a slightly different shaped sector by 2020. I think, particularly when all these other changes that have kicked in, and we're yet to see what the real effects will be in terms of fundraising. You know, the charity brand has taken the biggest battering it probably has ever taken, you know, in recent years. You know, the salary, the fundraising, you know, it's all gone red top this year. And we don't know if that's going to start switching people off or not. You know, there's no sign that it is yet. I don't think donations have particularly been affected, as far as I know. But it's often by small increments that trust is eroded.
Yeah.
We can't afford too many more kids' companies, that's for sure. You know, I think that once people start to think, I'm not really sure if I trust putting my money into charities because the money goes in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Then we're fucked. You know, we really are truly, oops, I shouldn't swear on this, but we're truly knackered.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and trust is very binary. It's either there or it's not there.
Yeah.
Or we've still got the public's trust. We've seen some dints put in it. But if any of those missiles puncture that trust, we are in a truly difficult place, because, you know, the giving will then fall away in quite a big way.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. So we're not short of a challenge. I think that's the message that's coming across. Craig, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate talking through the article and getting your thoughts.
Thank you for asking me.
That's my pleasure. I guess you'll have articles coming again in Third Sector through the course of this year.
Got one on social finance coming at some point. I've got to write it yet, but I think everyone's wondering what on earth that's all about and what it really means. So I'm trying to do something on that.
Looks at its
true potential, perhaps.
Oh, interesting. That's
beyond the hype.
To the real subject. Well, we'll look forward to that. And I just want to say thank you again for talking, and great article. And thanks for joining us.
All right. It's a pleasure, Ben. All the best.